Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. I'm Tyler Tischler, Associate Editor of Reader Views Incorporated.
And I'm Victor Volkman from Loving Healing Press in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Our show is recorded live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. It's June 28, 2007, and welcome to episode number 32 in our series. Tonight's topic is the ins and outs of book reviews, and our special guest who will be joining us this hour is Irene Watson of ReaderViews.com. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, which is AuthorsAccess.com.
And I'd like to remind our listeners at Authors Access that we have a new podcast available at Authors Airwaves, interviewing Kenneth McLean, author of The Vibrational Universe. He'll be reading from his book, beginning at Chapter 1. You may recall Ken McLean was a guest on our show about 2 months ago when he taught us the secrets of internet marketing, ebooks, and publication publicity. So have a listen over at www.authorsairwaves.com. Thank you.
Now tonight we're on the line with Irene Watson, a native of Northern Alberta. Irene's career has taken her from career counseling to business owner, working in management for the police force, spiritual counseling, teaching at a college, retreat, seminar, and workshop design and facilitation, to her most recent venture, the owner-manager of Reader Views. She has an MA in psychology from Regis University. After retiring in 2003, Irene authored an award-winning memoir called The Sitting Swing, which was published in October 2005 and has recently co-edited a book entitled The Story That Must Be Told. Originally having a hard time getting reviews for her book, she started Reader Views on a whim. Within a month, it exploded into a full-time business. So much for retirement. Reader Views has expanded since then into author publicity, editing, creating book videos, and the most recent development, coaching for books proposals and even manuscript submission service. Now, as I mentioned earlier, our special co-host this week is Tyler Tischler, who has just finished his third book in the Marquette Trilogy, which is entitled Superior Heritage. You can read more about his books on MarquetteFiction.com. But now we're going to go to this week's special guest, Irene Watson. Good evening to you, Irene.
Good evening, Victor and Tyler. Great to be here.
Well, Irene, I'm thrilled to have you here tonight and to get to talk to you about Reader Views and the importance of book reviews. And I'm especially interested in what Victor said in introducing you about how you started up Reader Views because you were having difficulty actually getting reviews for your book. And so could we start out by you just telling us a little bit about why you felt it was so important to have reviews for your book and how you came up with the idea for Reader Views?
Yes, Tyler. When I started looking into publicity of my own book, and doing a lot of research, I spent hours and hours and hours on the internet doing research and trying to get reviews from my book, and I realized that even though there are a lot of review services or places you can get reviews, it's not easy to get a review, and I guess it's because my one book is competition with the 200,000 others that are published yearly. So from that, I just realized that there was a need, and I really wanted to fulfill this need. So out of my retirement, I was going to do this little hobby. Well, so much for my hobby, it ended up a fun business, and we've expanded. So, and the reason that we do need to get reviews is because it's the most effective way to promote books. It's just people want to read reviews when they are searching for books to read for themselves.
Well, when you first sent out your book for reviews, and maybe just for to start a little bit, could you explain to us a little bit about what your book was about and how did you decide where to send the book for reviews? Were there certain review publications that you felt were most appropriate to get a review from?
My book is actually a memoir, and so, of course, not all review services will give a review. And not only that, I also use a subsidy press, and it's a print-on-demand book. So that, unbeknownst to me, before I actually went through all that maneuver of having my book published in that way, I had no idea that I wasn't actually going to be able to get reviews because of those three facets. So, unfortunately, I did get a review from Publishers Weekly, which I understand because of all those three things, it's not easy to get. But I did get one, and also realizing that the major five reviewers, top reviewers, really do frown upon the self-published or the subsidy or the print-on-demand. So from that research, I started looking at online reviewers, and from that, I was able to find quite a number of people that would review my book. I sent out a lot of books myself, and it was probably, I don't know, about 75. I ended up getting 12 reviews from that. So I considered myself pretty lucky.
Well, what would you recommend for somebody just starting out that is self-published like yourself and they do want to get reviews? Are there certain reviews like services or publications that they should just not waste their time trying to get a review from, or should they focus on like more like the local newspaper?
Many of the larger local newspapers will not review local print-on-demand self-published books, and this is, I'm finding more and more that the larger newspapers wouldn't. Now, the smaller community newspapers like the one I live in did do a feature on me, so that's, I would say, if you're talking about publications, that's the area to go into, are the small community, small town newspapers. The other thing is search online, and the most important thing is when you go to a review site is look at their guidelines. Everybody has different guidelines. Everybody has different ways of accepting reviews, books for review, and this is another thing that you can really tell whether it's a scam review service or if it's a legitimate review service. Check them out. Check each one out.
Yeah, Irene, that's interesting. I've heard of people running into problems with that. Can you explain a little bit more about what a scam reviewer is and the warning signs?
Definitely. In most cases, scam reviewers do not provide tear sheets. You will not get a review from them, a tear sheet or some piece of paper saying that or giving the review to you. They also quite often accept books without a query letter or submission form. Now, there again, it's important to check the guideline to see whether or not this is mentioned in the guideline. Sometimes some of the reviewers do ask just for the books to be submitted, but then take a look and see, are they giving you a review? Are they posting your review on the website? Are they posting your review on Amazon? That gives the reviewer credibility. But if it just says, send your book in, but it doesn't promise you what they're going to do for you, I would really take a look at that. The other thing is scammers often solicit with false pretenses, and they often don't read your book and give their honest opinion. Sometimes what they do is they'll just reword or use the synopsis or a press release that you have sent them, and just by verbatim, and then they give you the review that way. So it's just, there's a lot of little red flags to look out for.
Right. I can see there's a lot to it. We'd like to hear your opinion on paid reviews versus unpaid reviews. I've seen places that charge up to $350, $400 for a review. Does it seem like you get what you pay for with these services, or what should I be looking for?
Well, I think there again, to look at the credibility of the review service, and yes, I understand Kirkus Discovery is, I believe, the last time I looked, it was like $275. Maybe it's more than that. The thing is that I think there's going to be a change in industry because what's happening is costing a lot of money to give a review. I know that the industry standard has been for, I don't know how many years, probably since the beginning of books being published, that reviews are to be free, and the old diehards are still saying that this should be. However, there's got to be consideration then, and I really have this experience that, okay, so we are giving free reviews, but all of a sudden it's just getting to be out of hand because what's happening is it's costing me, my company, between $25 and $35 for every free review. Now, this sounds like maybe, you know, what am I talking about? Because, hey, the author just sends in the book, and I just have to review it, and then I'm give them a review. It sounds pretty simple. However, one doesn't realize that there is so much administration to a review. First of all, to receive the information, to process it. Then when the reviewer sends back the review, there's processing of the review, there's editing, there's uploading to the website, there's creating PDFs. I have found that it takes 2 solid hours for each review just for the admin. And, hey, nobody wants to work for me for minimum wage. So, you know, there we go. And also, there's this thing about paid reviews. Are you going to get an honest opinion? Well, there again, as an author, you have to really check to see, is this review service giving honest opinions? In my case, yes, I demand from my reviewers that they give their personal, honest opinion, regardless if it's an express review that we charge for because they get a stipend for the express review, which they have to do in 2 weeks. They have to give me their honest opinion. We don't always give 5 stars. We don't. We give anything from 3, 4, 5 stars, regardless if it's an express review or not. So that's a long way of answering your question, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's fascinating. I like hearing about the internals of how things really work. I guess we should go through the flow of the whole thing. So suppose I hear that my book has been accepted for review. What do I do other than bite my fingernails?
Well, you know, the first thing, and I just ran into this today, is do not ask for a review unless your book is available. I have people submit books for review on our form, and all of a sudden I get them. A reviewer, and they're saying, we have an editing issue, or, gosh, my book isn't ready yet. Well, reviewers are scheduled. Everybody's on a schedule. We have X number of time to get that review back to the author. And if you ask for a review, you're accepted, and all of a sudden you don't have the book available, this really puts jeopardy on the other authors, because you're slotted into a time, we're waiting for it, and it doesn't come. I check on it, and it's like, sorry, but it wasn't ready. That doesn't work. So that's one thing, to really, really be on tabs up. Send it immediately, and when the reviewer has accepted your book, that means that they're waiting for it, and it's important to get it out there. Send a priority mail, get a tracking number. You wouldn't believe how many times people send media mail, they have no tracking number, and they say they sent the book, but we have no idea where this book is. It just seems to have gone out into the ethers. The other thing is, do not send an email telling the reviewer to contact your publisher. We've had that happen. We've accepted a book for review, and the author says, here's my publisher's email address. Ask them for it. It's like, no. Cancellation immediately. This does not work. Always send a new copy. Don't deface it. If anything, if you're going to be doing any defacing, what you do is you autograph it to the reviewer. Reviewers love autographed books, but don't deface it. Don't write across it, not for sale. Don't send dog-eared books that have come off a shelf or have fallen down and got all messed up. Don't do that. The other thing is, you can send a media package, possibly a bio of yourself, maybe the synopsis, maybe other reviews, maybe a news release. Some reviewers like to look at that. Others don't. In my case, I think it's about 50-50. Some of the reviewers don't even want to be influenced by all these other things. They want to go ahead and read the book for themselves. And so it's an option. The other thing that really is good for your own records, and I definitely suggest keeping a record of who you sent the book to, when, whether or not they received it according to the tracking record and so on. But one thing that's important, and I'm finding a lot of authors do not do this, is enclose a self-addressed stamp postcard so that the reviewer can fill it out and say, yes, I received your book, and yes, I will have it back to you in 6 months or 6 weeks or 4 weeks or 2 months or whatever, so that there's that, you have that record that you will be getting a review. And it's really important to take pride in how you package your book. I mean, after all, you've birthed this baby, and it's important to package it properly. And again, this is what I'm saying, you know, don't deface it. So, let's, you know, just really, really look after this book and send it to your reviewer with pride.
Well, Irene, I'm very much interested in everything you have to say. It really gives us a perspective both from the author's point of view and the reviewer's. And I know as an author myself, sending out books for review is rather a bit disgruntling to me because it costs so much for the books in the first place, and then you have to spend all this money giving away these free books. And to hear you describe it from the other end, what the cost is to the reviewers themselves, I think is, you know, just fascinating, seeing both sides of the coin there. Could you tell us a little bit about what kind of a relationship you should have with the reviewer or the review company once you send out the book? Is there a certain amount of time that you should wait before you follow up with them?
It's a good idea to create a good relationship, and not all review services are open to creating relationships. That's something that we at ReaderViews are adamant. I'm adamant with my staff that to create relationships. We always answer emails. We don't ignore the authors. And it's also important for, as I mentioned earlier, if your book is not ready, if something happens, communicate with us. And I think that that is the key. It's important for the author to have clear communication with a review service. Now, in our case, we discourage for the author and the reviewer themselves to have any communication. We prefer the communication to come through us because this way it keeps it clean. It really does keep it clean. But in my case, being the managing editor, I love to get emails from authors, and we can chat. They can ask me questions. I'm open to answering. And I'm sure that there are other review services that do exactly the same thing. I think, for one, Jim at Midwest, he has a telephone number on his website. He actually answers the phone, and he will talk to the author. And that's important. That's important to look at when you are searching for reviewers.
Yeah, that's a wonderful way to do business, to be thoughtful of the author, because it is really a very sensitive issue for the author, their book, and to have at least to know that the reader is friendly and willing to be a resource to them is really a valid service. And I know, having worked with you at ReaderViews, that we really do try to provide that. You mentioned earlier that you had sent out, I think, something like 75 copies of your book, and you only got 12 reviews. Those other copies that you didn't get reviews for, I'm wondering what happened to those books. Do you know? Do you think that, or did you send those out blindly, or did you send out query letters first? And what should a author do? Should they send out a query letter first, or just mail the book off to the reviewer?
Well, I did. I filled out forms. I sent out coldly, and I asked. I queried. It depended on what was on the website. I think what happened are the ones that I had sent in without a query letter, just sent it to an address because that's what it said. I think those are the ones that ended up on Amazon for sale. And what's an interesting thing is that, and in fact, I checked the other day, they're still selling books that say sticker, review copy sticker on them. So I know that my review copies are sold even with stickers, which I understand Amazon's not supposed to allow, but that happens. Others, I'm not sure what happened. I did an interesting test myself. I ordered one of the used copies to see where did this book come from. And it was interesting because I ordered it, and it did come to me, and it was somebody that had purchased the book, had read it, and then sold it at half-price books. So so who knows where they end up. But this one, that was not a review copy. I was thinking it was a review copy, and it wasn't. You know, I took 75 copies of my book. I did not – actually, I should retract that because it wasn't just my book. I actually sent out galleys. I did galleys. I don't know, I would say probably about 40 of those were galleys. And then I actually sent out real book copies, too, with a review copy sticker on them. So, and let's say Publishers Weekly, of course, they reviewed it from the galley, and some of the others did, too. But the other thing also I wanted to add that I started getting reviews from manuscripts, too. I had, in order to get my endorsements for the back of the book, I sent out manuscripts. I started way, way ahead of even my galleys. I sent out manuscripts to get endorsements so that at least I would have endorsements on the back of the book and also in back of the galleys. So.
Well, that sounds like a lot of work that you put into it with the galleys and the manuscripts and then the actual books. And we all know, we hear all the time about how authors spend so much money to get their books published and then they don't have any money left over to do the marketing for the book. And so what would you say would be a fair percentage of money to budget for the review process or a certain number of copies that you should send out for reviews?
Well, gosh, you know, that's a tough one because each one of us has a different type of a budget. And you were so right, just what you had said, that the author spends so much money on getting the book published that there's just no money for marketing. But there again, I have to encourage them to look at their financial situation and just see exactly what it is. Can they even afford to publish the book? There's no point publishing a book if you can't do anything with it. And then just really set yourself up for a lot of disappointments. And so, but I would say that the minimum is to send out at least 20, either galleys or books, for review. That would be my minimum.
Yeah, Irene, I agree with you on that. I always start with about 20, and then I see how I'm going to develop my marketing plan from there. But really, you can't even have a plan with less than 20. Before we go any further, let's define a couple of things for people who might not be familiar with the terms. What are we talking about when we're talking about manuscript versus a galley and versus an advanced reading copy?
You know, that's a funny question to me because there's so much controversy over this one. And
really?
Yeah, everybody seems to have to think that they have the right answer. So this is my perspective on it and from the experience that I have at what comes to us. So that's where I'm going to come from. So manuscript is that the 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper, double-spaced, possibly printed on both sides, bound either with a spiral or in a binder. It's like, it's your story. It doesn't have a cover on it. It's just the plain old manuscript. It's like what you have written, and that is it. It's not ready for printing. It probably needs 3 or 4 more editing runs through it, or, you know, it's just that first printing of everything from page 1 to 300, or how many pages you have. It's that first printing. Now, the galley is the next step, and that is the manuscript that is then edited probably once or twice, and it still needs another editing run, and it's made to the size of the book. It's bound professionally. It does not have a cover that's the same as the book, but what it does have is a plain cover. We do the service for authors, and we make them yellow because we're hoping that they will stick out once they come out of an envelope and thrown on some bookshelf at the review service, that somebody will pick it up because it is yellow and it's bright. It has the information, the same as the sell sheet, on the front of the cover. It has the book name, the author, the publisher, when it's going to be published, the genre, the price, the type of marketing, and where the distribution is going to be, who is distributing it, just that pertinent information, and a tagline. The back of the book has something about the author, maybe some type of a synopsis, and another tagline. That's the galley. Then the advanced review copy is the next stage after the galley, which is needs one more editing. It doesn't have its final editing, but it's still in the book form size, and it does have a cover on it, and someplace on the cover it says advanced review copy, or sometimes they have advanced reader copy. And there again, it's pretty much the same as the book, except it has that distinguishing mark on it. So, and it's someplace on there quite often. The publishers put not for sale on it too. So that's what we have for those three. And then, of course, the finished book is what goes out on the market.
Right. And the infamous folded and gathered. I think you have a story about that one, right?
That was an interesting, I opened up this package and it's like, what is this? And then, of course, this is another thing. They sent me a letter saying that there are two review copies in this envelope, and I'm looking, and here's this folded and gathered book, and I'm looking at it. It has no cover. It has no information on it except this F&G is just there. And they said they were going to send two, and of course they only sent one. So here again, it's a mistake. You know, don't say you're sending one thing and doing something else. But I looked at this, and I actually refused it because this is a children's book. Now, we have children that are reviewing books. I wasn't about to send an F&G to a child that has no idea what this thing is without a cover. They're probably going to think that they got some used book or where's the cover. And so I'm not even for those, and I don't even think that really most publishers even do them. This is the first time and the only time that I ever got one.
Yeah, I gather it's a kind of antiquated process.
Yeah, and not only that, my goodness, this would look like it was hand-bound, and it must have cost a lot of money just to get this together, much more probably than what it would have cost to put together an advanced review copy or even a galley.
Amazing. This was an illustrated book, of course?
Yeah, it was illustrated. But, you know, we've had other illustrated books from publishers, and they come in galley form.
Okay. Let's talk about, in your researches, have you found specific things that are better for fiction versus nonfiction? Or what about looking really towards niche publications? Like, for example, if I'm doing a book on horses, would I, you know, send it off to the horse journals and so on?
Definitely. That is an area that's really important. The authors themselves know their book. They know, prior to even getting into anything past the manuscript stage, there has to be a lot of research. And as an author, it's really important to know where the niche is, who is your target market, and this is where you go. And definitely, like you say, when you're talking about a horse book, go for the publications that have to do with horses, because that's your target market. And that it's so important to have that. There's no point sending a book that's on how to basket weave to a reviewer that only does romances. So there again, it's really important to do that research as to who will do the reviews for you.
Right. Thanks for bringing that up. Let's talk a little bit about fair use. I'm a little confused sometimes as to how much of a review I'm really supposed to quote. The part of it or all of it or what?
Well, in our case, when we send the tear sheet, we say that you use the whole review as long as you give us the credit for it. And that's all I ask for, is take whatever you want out of it, or you can post the whole review on your website or for your marketing, or run it off and put it in your media kit. It's for you. However, not all review services allow that. In fact, I ran this into it with my own book, that I was given a review, but I couldn't use it. Yeah, exactly. And the only thing that I was able to do is link to their website page where my review was. They did not give me permission to use that review, not even one line out of it, and, you know, refer to them, giving them credit. They wouldn't even allow me to do that. So there again, it's important, really important, to check the guidelines, check the review service as to what can you use. And so there again, there's not much wonder that there is confusion.
Yeah, I guess the last thing we want is, you know, a voicemail that says, you know, why did you print this thing which you're only allowed to use 11 words from, or something like that.
Right. And I think each one is so different, and so you have to look at each one separately.
Yeah. Now, one of the great truisms is that pre-publication review is supposed to be able to impact sales in a major way, sometimes upwards of, I hear, 1,000 to 2,000 copies versus post-publication reviews. I'm wondering what your research has yielded on the impact of pre-publication versus post-publication reviews.
In my research, and also with my own book, I believe that there is some truth to it, and that's why, it's important to start getting reviews, even at manuscript stage or doing the galley stage, and get your reviews, get everything done. And that's the time to start. The time to start is about 6 months prior to publication, and get your reviews. For instance, Publishers Weekly and Kirkus and Booklist and all those want your review your book 3 to 4 months prior to. And we do reviews for a number of publishers, and right now, in fact, just today, we got some books that are not in publication until November. So they know the system. They're going to get all their reviews, or majority of their reviews, prior to. Now, there is advantage to that, of course, is because you can use those reviews in your media kit. You can use them in your any type of marketing that you're doing. You've got all that in place prior to that book being published. Now, getting post-publication reviews is good, too. There are review places that will not take a pre-pub galley or an advanced review copy. They request a post-publication copy. Now, I'm not really sure why, if it's because if they don't review, they can sell it. You know, you can't sell an advanced review copy or a galley, but a lot of review services do sell books if they don't get reviewed. So I'm not sure what it is. But the advantage also there is for getting those post-pub reviews on Amazon. And there again, it's really important for the authors to get reviewers to post on Amazon. So many people go to Amazon, whether they buy the book at Amazon or not, and they look to see what other people thought of the book. So there are advantages to both.
Well, Irene, the companies that do the pre-publication reviews, is it clear with them? Do they wait to print the reviews until the books are actually published, or are these reviews being published before the books are actually on the marketplace?
For instance, Publishers Weekly, they will post the review on Amazon prior to publication. And so that's important. It's also important that that book be on Amazon for pre-publication sales. I know there's a lot of controversy over that, too. However, I just totally support and insist that you get that book out there for pre-publication, and like Publishers Weekly will put it on there if it's on there.
Well, you've taken us really through the whole process here of sending your books in for reviews, and then what to expect from the review company or the review service. And I guess my next question, the next obvious step, is what does an author do once they receive the review back? What's the best way to use that review to help sell your books?
Well, the first thing that the author should do is send a thank you note. You know, it's just the reviewer does a major service for the author. I know that what I have run into is the authors think that they're giving the reviewer a service because we get to read your book. Not. It's not that way at all. At all. We are providing the service to the author, and we don't get enough thank yous. The reviewers really appreciate a personal thank you note, an email, anything to just acknowledge the fact that, hey, you know, thanks for reading my book. I know you spent hours and hours reading this, and thanks. I really appreciate it. That's the first thing that you can do. So the next thing is make copies of the tear sheet of the review. Put them in your media kit. Make sure that it goes on Amazon. Just take it to the fullest. Use those reviews as much as you possibly can. Take the a blurb out of it. Use it, you know, in your press kit. Use it in your press release. Refer to reviews in press releases. Just use it to the fullest. Put a lot of mileage into it.
Well, thanks for all the information about that. And I think you know, Reader Reviews really does provide a great service that way. And I know from the way the book industry is going, there's talk that many of the major reviewers, especially lots of the newspapers, are phasing out book reviews now. So what do you see as the future of the book review industry?
I see that, number one, more and more of the authors are going to have to pay for the overhead, for one thing. And, yes, being that those major publications are phasing out, that means that the onus is going to be more and more onto the online review services. And, after all, you know, we are so online-oriented. Now, most of us probably spend hours and hours on the computer, and I know ourselves, we've canceled many publications. We no longer get them in print form. We go online, and we read what we want to read. And so I think that the industry is just really changing, and the authors are going to have to seek more into getting online reviews. It's just that's the way it's going. Marketing is definitely going that way. Virtual tours for authors are happening online. More and more authors are having stopping places at different places to do their marketing, and more of these kind of websites are starting to show up. And, of course, what's going to happen is the reader, the reading audience, is going to also move into that direction. And there again, the importance of more and more reviews, more and more postings.
Well, Irene, this has really been an eye-opener for myself, and I think I speak for Tyler as well, to see behind the iron curtain here of what happens in the reviewer's secret society.
I want to just mention also, you know, we talked about getting reviews, but what happens if you get refused or you don't hear back or you put in a query letter, they said, you know, go ahead and send your book and you don't hear? Use that as a learning experience and just really ask yourself some questions. You know, did you actually follow the guidelines? Did you actually go to the website and follow the guidelines? You know, I just wanted to kind of divert for a minute here. We get so many emails saying new release, and they're telling us about their new release. That kind of stuff gets trashed, and I know that I'm not the only one that trashes that kind of stuff. If they only went to the guidelines, read our guidelines, they know that they don't send us an email saying that they have a new release, because really we are so busy that we're going to actually pay attention to the people that follow the guidelines. And the other thing is, if you don't get a review, there again, did you look in the guidelines? Are they reviewing that genre? Is this something that they have reviewers for? The other thing is the synopsis. Was the synopsis thorough? Don't send pages and pages and pages of a synopsis. 3 or 4 paragraphs is just fine, but the hook has to be there. It has to interest the reviewer. That's what sells your book to the reviewer, is your synopsis. If you just put you know, a couple of lines that this is a book of poetry, well, great, but I want to know what kind of poetry. Is it fiction? Is it nonfiction? What is the genre of the poetry? Why should I read it? That synopsis has to hook me. The synopsis has to tell me that I would get interested in reading that book. If the synopsis is not really attractive to me because it doesn't tell me anything, I'm not going to pick up that book. Not only that, if I look at it, and in our busy world that we don't have time to read 3 pages of a synopsis, I'm not going to read that book, and I'm not going to read that synopsis because I've lost it already. So that's an important thing. And really, you know, what it really boils down to is preparation, presentation, reading the guidelines, and sometimes it is just luck of the draw.
Wow. Yeah, that really sums it all up, I think, in a nutshell. Thank you again for spending the time with us and revealing to us the secrets of getting good reviews.
Well, you're welcome, and it's just been my pleasure. And, gosh, good luck to the authors. And I know that if they follow the guidelines, the chances just raise quite a bit.
Amen. You've been listening to another podcast edition of Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. You can hear us every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and we'll be back on the air after a short break on Thursday, July 12, 2007, when our topic will be creating readable sci-fi and fantasy books. And our guest who will be joining us is Bob Sanders of Mundania.com. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. Authors Access is a joint production of Reader Views Incorporated and Loving Healing Press.
For Reader Views, this is Tyler Tischler in Marquette, Michigan.
For Loving Healing Press, this is Victor Volkman in Ann Arbor, Michigan, wishing you all a good evening.